Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
So it's not a sin in your church to have an abortion?
That's the kind of conversation we would have, finding out your story, where you're from. God's the judge. People have to live to their own conviction.
The science is clear. The Bible is clear. And if we're honest, our intuitions are clear. We know what we're killing. We're killing a human being.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
You need to know about John Rogers because he was a man who was as bold as a lion. He was a champion for the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ, and he will always be remembered as the first martyr under Bloody Mary.
But only if we take the time to remember. This is Wretched Radio. It's Reformation Millennium. Making our way, so quickly through the Marian Martyrs. This is a chapter in the Protestant Reformation Heritage book that is often overlooked, and it shouldn't be. Read Fox's Book of Martyrs. It contains story after story after story of man, woman, child killed under the reign of Bloody Mary. The first martyr up to bat, a man named John Rogers, a man who was not dumb.
The reformers were brilliant men. These were not men who didn't know what they were talking about. These men had been educated and trained at the highest level. Now, I didn't go to Cambridge and I didn't go to Oxford. You don't have to go to a fancy place like that in order for God to use you. I don't want to leave you with that impression. But I do want you to know the facts and the truth about these reformers. These were brilliant men who had received the highest education that a person could possibly have. They went to Oxford, they went to Cambridge, they went to St. Andrews, they went to the University of Paris, to Orleans, to Bordeaux, to Wittenberg. These men had a mind that had been sharpened through diligent study. And once they were converted, they used their razor-sharp mind to study the Bible, to translate the Bible, to teach the Bible, to proclaim the Bible.
These men were not dodos. Okay, Martin Luther, he was kind of a farmer, plowboy, not very educated. Actually, let's just check the record on that fact, too. Where did that rumor get started? He was just kind of a bumpkin, that Martin Luther, a bit of a rube. No, he wasn't. Like the rest of them. Brilliant mind. Studied mind. Knew languages. After all, he was Dr. Martin Luther. These men were not dumb. And that includes the first Marian martyr, John Rogers.
He attended Pembroke College at Cambridge. I was just at Pembroke College, Cambridge, less than 2 months ago. It is an extraordinary place. And he was well-educated. He had this brilliant mind. He was a skilled scholar. He received a bachelor's degree in 1525. He soon became a junior canon at Christ Church in Oxford. And so he is now teaching in the most renowned university in all of England. He became an ordained priest in the Catholic Church. All of the reformers started out inside the Catholic Church. That's basically all there was.
You either was or you wasn't. John Rogers was a scholar priest.
He receives a call from a group of British English merchants who all live in the same house, and they have a factory, and they're doing business in Europe, and they want someone to teach them the Bible. They want someone to be a chaplain for their workers, and so they call John Rogers, and he moves into the house, and guess who's living in this house? William Tyndale.
Well, well, well. William Tyndale, the great English reformer whose life was dedicated, among other things, to translating the Bible into the vernacular of the peasantry. William Tyndale himself became a martyr. John Rogers, the Roman Catholic priest scholar, moves in with this Protestant outlaw.
John Rogers ends up in the same house with William Tyndale. And William Tyndale is in the back room of the house translating the Bible into the English language. And here he meets Tyndale, and Rogers is a Catholic priest, and Tyndale shares the gospel of Jesus Christ with him, and Rogers comes to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. He's born again. He becomes a new creature in Christ, and the old things passed away, and new things have come, and he now has the life of God within his soul.
So now what you got is somebody who's well-versed in Roman Catholic theology, born again, courtesy of William Tyndale, who now sets his sight on completing the work that William Tyndale had begun. Why? Well, William Tyndale didn't quite get to see through his work of translating the Bible into English.
There were many attempts to find Tyndale. No one could find Tyndale because he had gone underground and was doing his translation work. There was a young man named Harry Phillips who was given his father's vast estate to take to London in order to deposit into a financial institution, and Harry gambled it away. He lost his father's entire estate. He didn't know what to do. The Catholic Church found out that he had lost his father's estate. And they said to him, "We will replace every shilling, every cent, if you will go find William Tyndale." He finds the house. He befriends himself to Tyndale. And he eventually lures Tyndale out of the house down a little narrow passageway. He has government officials waiting. He comes in behind Tyndale and points over the head of Tyndale. They apprehend him. The year is 1535. They take him to a castle. They hold him there for 18 months. And then they strangle him to death. Then they burn him. And then they put the gunpowder and blow up Tyndale.
And thus ended the translation of the Bible into English, except for John Rogers.
John Rogers gathers up all of Tyndale's work and now feels, I've got to finish this. There is another man who is helping Tyndale. His name was Miles Coverdale. Miles Coverdale was not the scholar Tyndale was. No one was the scholar Tyndale was. But he wasn't the scholar that John Rogers was either, and he produces a somewhat inferior translation of Esther through Malachi. So what John Rogers does, he goes through Esther through Malachi and corrects Miles Coverdale's mistakes. And he also then works through Tyndale's work in the New Testament and the Pentateuch and makes some 330 changes. And he comes in with Job and Isaiah, and John Rogers is elevating the quality of the English Bible that Tyndale has started and that Miles Coverdale has completed. And John Rogers is making an extraordinary contribution to the English Bible.
How could he do such work? They weren't dum-dums. He was new languages, new biblical languages, new Latin was studied. John Rogers completing the work that William Tyndale had begun and then even, well, did some additional work.
He begins to add margin notes to make it like a study Bible. Now, Tyndale has already done some margin notes. John Rogers does many more margin notes to make this a study Bible. Then he writes articles that will be prefaces to the entire Bible. and two books in the Bible, and the result is over 2,000 margin notes. And the Catholic clergy, once this is printed, they feared Tyndale's notes even more than the translation of the into the English language, because he is teaching sound doctrine in these notes.
If you don't mind, I'd like to just take a moment and gather myself. I thought John MacArthur was the one who invented study notes. I'll be fine.
It is 1,110 pages, and at the top of each page, he has a summary of what is on that page, and each chapter has a summary that begins that chapter. And what John Rogers has produced is, in reality, is the first commentary on the Bible in the English language. In addition, John Rogers adds cross-references in the margin as well, so that someone who has his Bible will be able to go to the parallel verses and be able to compare Scripture with Scripture. And he also adds a history of the world.
Kind of a sluggard. We'll continue John Rogers next on Wretched Radio.
Thanks for being here. Glad you would spend time listening to Wretched Radio today. Our evangelistic booklet, What Time Is Purple, is perfect for the atheist or agnostic in your life who's been persuaded by evolutionary theory, or maybe for a young person in your life who maybe needs a little encouragement and assurance. We'd set out with a goal to hand out 1 million copies of What Time Is Purple, and you know what you've done? You have handed out over 400,000 copies. Well done. And thanks to the generosity of our gospel partners, we still have the same spiffy deal. You get up to 20 copies of What Time Is Purple for free with just two tiny little strings attached. You pay for the shipping, and you promise to give each copy away. Wretched.org/purple if you need more details, or if you'd like to read the booklet for yourself. Wretched.org/purple. Now, if you're a church or ministry and you want to hand out a whole bunch of copies, we got you covered. Talk to al@wretched.org. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Tempted, but I'm not going to do it.
Some churches in the rural areas in Zimbabwe, you get a church with about 200 members. You only find one person with one Bible.
So tempted to say, you know, for just the cost of a cup of coffee, but I'm not going to do that. But we could change that statistic. There are churches all over the globe, 200 people attending a church with one Bible. $5 will purchase a new Bible for a believer. Bible League International, historically proficient, sound, reliable. Let's get some Bibles into the hands of believers so they don't have to be sharing paragraphs until the next service. Please support Bible League International, wretched.org/Bible.
So, what do you call a fish with no eyes?
I don't know. What?
A fsh. Get it? A fsh. Because there are no eyes?
Oh.
Our newest evangelistic booklet is titled, Are You a Rotten Fish? While there aren't any amazing jokes like that in it, it does provide a thorough presentation on true and false conversions. Jesus preached on the subject of true and false conversions with the parables about wheat and tares, wise and foolish virgins, good fish, and rotten fish. Are You a Rotten Fish compares and contrasts the true gospel versus false gospels, the correct gospel response of repentance and faith versus incorrect responses like asking Jesus into your heart. All you have to do is hop on your computer or your phone and visit wretched.org/fish and order your copies. That's fish with an I. So who do you know who might be a rotten fish? Order your copies at wretched.org/fish today. wretched.org/fish.
SOS Ministries wants to see a movement take place within God's church in Uganda. They want to see God-fearing, Christ-proclaiming churches rise up across the country and impact the whole of the Ugandan society. To reach out nationwide, they have the Ministry of Church Strengthening and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip indigenous pastors. But without the consistent support of God's people, none of this is possible. If you can help support SOS Ministries, go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com.
Books of the Bible. The book of Job answers the question, why do the righteous suffer? When Job loses everything, his friends blame him. But when Job questions the Lord, he responds, God is sovereign and he is good. His ways are beyond our understanding. When you suffer, know that God is in control. He has his own purposes that you may not understand. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Now, the spiritual climate in England is still very volatile. Henry VIII is upon the throne. He has passed some legislation that establishes Catholicism in England at this time. It is unsafe for John Rogers to come home, so John Rogers becomes a German pastor. First, he goes to the University of Wittenberg, where Martin Luther is. And he studies under Martin Luther, and he becomes an acquaintance of Philip Melanchthon, and he is given an even deeper understanding of the Bible and theology and sound doctrine and the original languages.
This is Wretched Radio, focusing on our Protestant Reformation heritage, specifically the Marian Martyrs, starting with John Rogers. Anybody else thinking about Brian Regan right now? Let me just help you with that. Personal brain synapse. Brian Regan, a stand-up comedian, mostly very clean, does a bit about the being at dinner with a braggart, somebody who's, you know, I did this and I did this and I did this. He said, imagine being an astronaut sitting at that table. You're listening to people, well, I started the business and it went from $1 million to $17 million in 1.2 years. And our somebody else is bragging about their education and he just sits and patiently waits and finally says, well, I landed on the moon. He just wins. You're an astronaut. You win. Whatever the story is that some braggart is telling, you can trump them with walking on the moon. I think John Rogers could have done that at a lot of dinner parties. Listening to people's conversion stories. Yeah. Well, I was converted under William Tyndale. Where did you study? Oh, I studied under Martin Luther, Philip Melanchthon. Wow! What a pedigree. John Rogers, the first Marian martyr, English Roman Catholic priest, gets saved under William Tyndale. Goes about the business of finishing Tyndale's translation work because he done got killed. Henry's on the throne. He's made Catholicism the state religion, but he dies.
Now, here's what you need to know. In 1547, Henry VIII dies. That's a good thing. And his son, Edward VI, becomes the king of England. And he is a strong, though a young man, he assumes the throne at age 9. He had been surrounded by teachers and tutors who were Calvinistic, who were Reformed, who were strong Bible men. And so when he assumes the throne, he is more than sympathetic to the Reformed cause. And he reverses the decisions and the policies of his father. And Edward VI now, it's a new day in England.
And it's a good day because it's Protestant friendly. How does John Rogers fit into that?
So John Rogers returns back to England. And the reformers who are in England, they are so happy to have John Rogers that they put him in very important positions in England. He becomes the vicar of St. Margaret's Church in London. He becomes the pastor of St. Sepulchre in London. And then the following year, in 1551, He is appointed by the Bishop of London, who is Nicholas Ridley, to become one of his personal chaplains. This puts John Rogers into the inner circle at the highest level of the Reformed movement in England.
Have you even heard the name John Rogers before? This guy was a mover and a shaker, and he was also a Protestant.
And so with this highly visible position, he spoke out against the Mass, and he spoke out against Catholic false doctrine and abuses. And he confronted the external religion of Catholicism and the worldliness and dead ritualism that was even in the Church of England. Because we need more than just a Protestant king. We need a Protestant people who have been born again. Just because you change the king doesn't mean that everyone now in the nation is suddenly born again.
Unfortunately, Edward didn't sit on the throne for very long.
This very same year that he has become a preacher at St. Paul's Cathedral and a lecturer, Edward VI dies.
That's a bummer.
At age 15. And so with his plan, he devised a strategy that Lady Jane Grey would be named the new Queen of England, which she was, and was on the throne for 9 days. Until Mary was able to rally her supporters and say, "I am the true heir to the throne as a daughter of Henry VIII by his first marriage."
That would be Catherine of Aragon, who was also a Roman Catholic. So now in power is Queen Mary, a Roman Catholic, not happy with the Protestants who caused the shame of her Roman Catholic mother, Catherine of Aragon, nor is she nuts about her stepbrother Edward the Protestant. And this brilliant theologian named John Rogers, translating the Bible into English, speaking out against Rome, well, you just got yourself a made-for-TV movie right there.
And as soon as Mary becomes the Queen of England, she immediately has John Rogers arrested and summoned before her council. And so, Rogers is charged with heresy. He is confined to house arrest. He is stripped of his ministry position at St. Paul's Cathedral. And in January of 1554, the new Bishop of London sentences Rogers to Newgate Prison. And in December of 1554, the English Parliament passes new legislation that if you are not upholding the Catholic dogma, you will be put to death. And so on January the 22nd, 1555, Rogers is brought back before the council, and he is condemned.
Why? Because he would not sell out.
The sheriff comes for him and asks Rogers if he would revoke his evil opinion of the Mass. And Rogers said, "That which I have preached, I will seal with my blood." The sheriff responded, "Then you, sir, are a heretic." Rogers replied, "That shall be known on the last day at the judgment." The sheriff chided, "Well, I will never pray for you." And Rogers said, "But I will pray for you."
Mention, these guys were men. John Rogers, scholar, Protestant, arrested under the reign, the bloody reign, of Queen Mary, the Roman Catholic, asked to recant. He says, "Not gonna do it." And now comes his execution. Please note a detail that I believe Dr. Steve Lawson in this particular lecture leaves out, and that is his wife, with multiple kids, I think about 8 or 9 kids, was pregnant when he got arrested. When he gets marched to the stake to be executed, he sees his newborn son for the first time.
He is hastily brought out of his cell and led on foot through the streets of Smithfield. His own church members, as I said in the last session, began to cheer, encouraging him, urging him to remain true to the faith that he had preached to them. Others were belittling him and taunting him and mocking him. He marches to the stake in front of this vast crowd, repeating Psalm 51 by memory out loud. And the public can hardly believe that this is happening before their eyes. Would they recant their convictions before the flame was ignited? Or would they remain true to their profession? The suspense was so thick you could cut the air with a knife.
But the smoke made it a little difficult to breathe.
The French ambassador was present, who was a zealous Catholic, and wrote a letter at the end of this day in which he said, "This day was the confirmation of the alliance between the Pope and this kingdom by a public and solemn sacrifice of a preaching doctor named Rogers, who has been burned alive for being a Lutheran," meaning holding to Luther-like doctrine. "But he died persisting in his opinion. At this conduct, the greatest part of the people were not afraid to make him many exclamations to strengthen his courage. Even his children assisted at it, comforting him in such a manner that it seemed as if it was his wedding day."
Your Protestant heritage includes that man, Dr. John Rogers. This is Wretched Radio.
Christians are called to make disciples, but where do we start? Hearts for the Lost assists local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They'll fly out to your church to put on an evangelism seminar and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com. Heartsforthelost.com.
This is Wretched Radio. Hi, I'm Tony Verkennis. A day of updates, if I may. An Alabama law that protected nearly all unborn babies won't take effect next month. U.S. District Judge Myron Thompson Tuesday temporarily blocked the law, saying it violated the U.S. Constitution. The 2019 Alabama Human Life Protection Act made it a felony to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy, with exceptions if the health of the mother was at risk or the baby had a lethal anomaly. Abortionists could have faced up to 99 years or life in prison for performing the procedure. Pro-life advocates in the state are hoping the law will go to the Supreme Court as a challenge to Roe v. Wade. Remember Pastor Andy Savage? The former teaching pastor at High Point Church in Tennessee has launched a new church after resigning from his previous post because of a sexual assault that took place when he was a youth pastor. The young lady victimized by Savage, Jules Woodson, broke the news of her encounter with Savage in an interview with the New York Times in March of last year, noting her disgust that he was applauded for his admission before his church. During his address, Savage passed the assault off as a sexual incident and reiterated that it had taken place 20 years prior. Responding to the news of Savage's new ministry exploits, Woodson expressed astonishment that her former abuser was free to return to the pulpit. In a tweet, Woodson wrote, "He was my ordained youth minister. He knew me and groomed me since I was 14. This was not a mistake, it was a crime. Per Texas law, it is a non-consensual sexual assault. Fine, let him move on and sit in the pews, but he has absolutely disqualified himself from the pulpit." Buzz to Vigen, among the many ministry figures echoing her sentiments. Savage has yet to issue a comment. His new website, Grace Valley Church, simply directs people to a questionnaire that requests a plethora of personal detail, the thought being Savage is currently gauging interest in his new ministry launch. And Covington Catholic High School student Nicholas Sandman's $250 million defamation suit against the Washington Post can move forward. U.S. District Judge William Bertelsmann of Kentucky partially reversed his July ruling, which had dismissed the case. He's now decided to allow three of the 33 allegedly defamatory statements made by the Washington Post about Sandman to be challenged in court. It was January 18th. Sandman and some Covington classmates were in D.C. to participate in the March for Life, Several were wearing the MAGA hats. A video of the kids went viral, appeared to show them blocking the path and mocking a Native American, Nathan Phillips, and the students were subsequently smeared as racists and harassed online. Longer videos then surfaced showing that Phillips had actually initiated the confrontation. The three statements the judge is allowing to proceed are assertions in the post that Sandman blocked Phillips' path, setting off the confrontation. More Wretched Radio straight ahead. I'm Tony Verkennis.
Important dates in Christian history. 716 AD. Boniface, the Apostle of Germany, sets out as a missionary to bring the gospel to pagan lands. As Islam decimated the church in North Africa and the Middle East, Christianity found shelter and thrived in Europe. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Come on, Christian movie maker. Make a movie about this guy. This is Wretched Radio. John Rogers, the first Marian martyr. Studying our Protestant Reformation heritage, the Marian martyrs in particular, were in Great Britain. Bloody Mary, a Roman Catholic, not happy with the Protestants, decides to clean house, goes after a very big gun. The first Marian martyr, John Rogers, a theologian, former Roman Catholic priest, converted under William Tyndale, studied under Martin Luther, Philip Melanchthon, finished translating the Tyndale Bible into English, holding high positions in Great Britain, arrested the first day she ascends the throne. Think she's got an axe to grind? Arrested, marched through his church, as if to say to others on the way to the stake, you keep holding to this man's teachings, this is going to happen to you too. They bring him out to public execution. Some are cheering, others are jeering. When he died, a peculiar thing happened. People cheered. Why? Because they saw a man who was willing to die for the truth, and not in a very pleasant way.
John Fox, who wrote Fox's Book of Martyrs, writes this: the fire was put to him, and when it had taken hold both upon his legs and shoulders, he, as one feeling no smart, washed his hands in the flame as though it had been in cold water. And that signified that his heart and his soul and his life had been washed clean by the blood of Christ. And after lifting up his hands unto heaven, Fox writes, not removing them until the devouring fire had consumed them. So he holds up his hands up unto heaven, and the fire just burns its way down his hands until there are no arms any longer. Until the devouring fire had consumed them, most mildly, this happy martyr yielded up his spirit into the hands of his heavenly Father.
While reciting Psalm 51, the penitentiary psalm, asking God to cleanse him, to forgive him, just like David, and he died, and the crowd cheered, not because they were happy he was dead, but because they saw a man who was willing to die for the truth in a gruesome, painful manner.
The courage of one believer instills and inspires courage in other believers. And if Rogers had caved in, if Rogers had recanted his faith, it would have been devastating to the others at Oxford before they were martyred. But Rogers held fast. And because Rogers was courageous and bold and remained strong, it caused Hugh Latimer and Nicholas Ridley and Thomas Cranmer to also remain strong. And the same is true for us here tonight. When you are strong in the Lord, it inspires steadfastness of faith to your family, to your friends, to your brothers and sisters in the Lord.
It may not be dying at the stake, probably not, in fact, But what about just standing firm in light of taunts, in light of shaming? Oh, come on. Really? You believe that? You told it. Come on, 21st century man. Let's get with the time. Let's be more sensitive. Let's be more thoughtful. Let's be more accepting. And you stand firm. It's an encouragement to others to do likewise. Get squishy. Others are going to get soft with you. John Rogers cheered and jeered, ultimately cheered, because they saw a man who was true to his convictions and died for it. And it encouraged others, hundreds more, to die for the truth under Bloody Mary. Why? Why? Because he was persuaded that these things are true. He was fully convinced that grace alone, faith alone, in Jesus Christ alone, are the only words of life revealed in the only true and sufficient source of truth, the Bible.
There really are truths worth dying for. And wise is the man and wise is the woman who knows which hills to die on. This was a gospel issue. And not a peripheral issue. Not a secondary issue. You and I must be able to sort out what is primary and what is secondary. And what is primary, we must never give up the high ground of the gospel, no matter what it will cost us.
No matter what it costs us. And these days, the cost only seems to be shame. You look like a rube. Hey, you're behind the, you're not on the right side of history. Oh, ouch. Compared to what John Rogers went through. But did you hear what Dr. Steve Lawson just said? Wise is the man, wise is the woman who chooses battles rightly. There is a battlefield that is raging. And we need to decide which what part of the field that we happen to be on in any given moment, and what weapons we should employ, and what we should be willing to endure, and how we should be responding. Looking forward to putting together something that might help us with this. How do we even respond to one another when there are differences in discernment? How do we react even to when we are arguing over this or that? Is there a time to use the nuclear option? Yeah, there is. And say strong things even? Yes, there actually is. After all, and Paul, he encouraged false teachers to castrate themselves. That's pretty nuclear option. It's on the table as an option. It's more the exception than the rule. But we need to be better discerners with one another to know how we are supposed to respond. When it is an essential issue, the stakes go way up. In fact, those are the highest stakes, and we must be willing to lovingly fight for the truth. And by the way, lovingly sometimes doesn't sound sentimental and gawpish. It's motivated in love to speak the truth to one another, even if we take a shellacking for it. John Rogers was willing to take a really big shellacking. Shellack to death. But it was about essential stuff. When it comes to the world, should they continue to persecute? Like, we don't want to give in on anything that we hold dear and true. Especially the essentials. There must, on the behalf of the believer, be an acknowledgement we might be asked to give our lives for these things and be willing to do so. The question then, of course, becomes why? Why should we be willing to die for the truth? Why should we be willing to die for God's sake?
Jesus died for us. We must be willing to make whatever sacrifice is necessary within the will of God for Him. And if Jesus Christ be God and died for us, then no sacrifice is too great for us to make for Him. And as Christians, we are those who are called upon by God to present our bodies as a living and holy sacrifice acceptable unto God, which is our spiritual service of worship.
Why would we think they wouldn't persecute us when they persecuted Him? Jesus was much nicer than we are. Jesus did everything right. I mean, can you imagine? Everything right. Never a misstep. Never a, oops. Hey, you know, maybe I should have. Oops, sorry for the way that I. Never, ever. And they killed him. Why would we expect anything less? We should expect it. And we should be living like it. And you can't help but learn a lesson from the Marian martyrs who were willing to die very gruesome deaths so that we could have the truth too. What do we see as the key? Ridley, Latimer, Cranmer, Rogers, Tyndale. Think of those five men that we've visited along the journey of John Rogers' life. What did they have in common? Among other things, what did they have in common? They were students of the Word. They immersed their lives, their whole being into the Bible. John Rogers translating it. William Tyndale translating it. Coverdale translating it. Ridley, Latimer, Cranmer propagating it into the English language so that people could have it, studying it. You can't help but think that is what prepared them for the day when they were called to give their lives, because by studying the truth, you believe the truth increasingly. By studying the one who sacrificed his life for us, we grow in our willingness to sacrifice our love for him, even if it is hot, even if it is painful, even if it is shameful. You want to be prepared for persecution? Let's take a page out of the Marian Martyrs. Be a student of the Word. And when the day comes, if the day comes, you too will be able to play the man or the woman or just the carbon 14 unit if you're really sensitive about those gender things. This is Wretched Radio. When you sponsor a Tomorrow Club for $30 per month in Eastern Europe, you are writing stories like this.
Vova and Maxim, one is 11 and another 13, they're brothers. Both of them smoke like crazy, so when they join Tomorrow Club, they would just make noise and kick other kids around. That winter, the father left the whole family without wood for the furnace, so they could freeze to death, and without food. So the leaders came and actually brought the wood to the family and fixed the things that they were broken in the home. So the boys saw what happened. They got saved, and the change in their attitude and behavior is just immense.
$30 per month, you'll be discipling 30 Eastern European kids in far-flung and very poor villages in Eastern Europe, and so much more. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
60 to 80% of our youth are leaving the nest, flying off to university, and abandoning their faith. Wretched wants to reach these kids with the gospel by distributing 1 million copies of our evangelistic resource, What Time is Purple, on university campuses around the country. If you are a ministry or a church group, we'd love to send you a whole bunch of copies. Just contact Al Yerkes, al@wretched.org, for more information. If you want to give out What Time is Purple on your own, visit wretched.org/purple for free copies. You know, it's only with your support of Wretched that we can do things like this. If you're already supporting Wretched, thank you very much. Please know we are very grateful. And if you're not, would you consider giving a tax-deductible gift to Wretched on a monthly basis? Go to wretched.org/donate for details on becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner. And to give out copies of our evangelistic booklet, What Time is Purple, go to wretched.org/purple, and let's reach millennials together.
Well, Geneva was married, but in her 20s, she had a one-year-old daughter at home that would interfere with her plans to go back to school, and so she was hoping she wasn't pregnant, but she was. I asked her how she felt about her pregnancy. She said, I don't want it, and my husband doesn't want it. She agreed to do an ultrasound, and she didn't want to take any pictures of the ultrasound, but she did look at it for a long time. And so we put it in the file, and then we started walking out of the clinic with her, and she turns to the nurse, and she says, do you have any referrals for medical providers? And I said, yeah, we've got a good doctor. You can go see him. Well, she went to him, and she chose life.
Ultrasounds save lives. Would you please consider supporting preborn.org, providing free ultrasounds, and presenting the gospel to moms and dads, $28 per ultrasound. How many could you support each month? Please support Preborn at preborn.org/wretched.
Important dates in Christian history. 716 AD. Boniface, the apostle of Germany, sets out as a missionary to bring the gospel to pagan lands. As Islam decimated the church in North Africa and the Middle East, Christianity found shelter and thrived in Europe. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It's pretty good.
What are you drinking? What are you drinking?
Well, it's not cannabis-infused coffee, if that's what you're insinuating. Honestly, man. This is Wretched Radio. Have you heard? Keurig, you know the machine that does the single cup for you? Going to be selling them their cannabis-infused coffee pods.
Wait a minute. Doesn't cannabis kind of ease you out, right?
Yeah.
But and then the caffeine kind of jacks you up.
Look, you want to be awake to enjoy your buzz or something like that. Look, Elvis couldn't keep it straight. I don't think I'm going to be able to keep my drugs quite straight. From the individual, I think he's somehow the president of Cannabineers. I think that's how you say it. Quote, "What we are aspiring to create is the normalization of cannabis consumption in a way that integrates with consumers' already established habits and lifestyles. So you can drink your coffee, your tea, without shame because it's both socially acceptable and discreet." So isn't that way to wake up in the morning? You know, I've got a lot to do, but I'm a bit anxious. I know. Cannabis-infused coffee pod for Keurig machines. Now available. That everything is to be normalized. That's what every form of sin is trying to be normalized. Drugs, check. Sexual issue, check. Gender issue, check. Marriage, check. Whatever you want, that you can, unless, of course, it's smoking. And then our society has, for the most part, determined that's really terrible. But other than that,
unless you're smoking cannabis, then you can kind of get away with it.
Well, or the kids, I guess, they put it inside of those Hufford.
The vapes.
The vapor thing.
Yep.
There you go. Right there. What a world, what a world, what a world. It is a post-Christian world. But some things don't change. Have you ever gone through a season where you're just reminded of how hard life is for so many people, how difficult circumstances are for so many people? I just saw a video. Ray Comfort sent, you know, he always sends out he's always busy evangelizing the Ray Comfort. And he said, this is an encouraging video for you to watch. He's printed up some new gospel literature that it's titled, check this out. No, I'm not going to tell you the title. That'll be the punchline. So he prints up this new gospel literature, and he decides, I'm going to drive my bike to the university campus, and I'm going to talk to kids. So he does. First young man he bumps into. Not set up, not staged. He says, so have you ever had a near-death experience? That's just an entree into talking about life and death, the big stuff. And the young man said, yeah, twice. And Ray, you know, kind of chuckling, was like, you're kidding. Well, tell me about it. Young man said, I tried to commit suicide twice. Well, that kind of changed the tone of it straight away. And Ray Comfort, so sensitive, honestly, so warm in his approach. I mean, all of us should just study him for that aspect alone in his evangelism, his compassionate heart toward the lost. And he said, well, tell me, why would you want to take your life? And the young man said, I don't want to be alone. I don't want to end up, you know, studying, getting a degree or job, and then coming home and just being alone. The name of the booklet that is brand new, hot off the press at Living Waters, You Are Not Alone. The beginning says, If you've ever thought about committing suicide, you're not alone. It's very common. If you're ever depressed, that's very normal. Why? Because this world is depressing. And it is. Oh, I know. There's a ton of sweet stuff that happens. There's lovely things that go on. There's so many things to enjoy that are still a part of God's good creation. But because of the fall, so much bad stuff. Emails from people. I received an email. Just that how people have been abused in their lives. It is so common how they have been wounded. We talked last week, if you recall, here on Wretched Radio about toxic parents. Do you remember? We're going to talk about that again later this week or maybe next week after we're done focusing on the Marian martyrs. But people are like, yeah, that's my parents. Yeah, that's my spouse. Yes, that's my life. Yeah, this is how I was treated, controlled. Everything in my life was ordered and dictated and demanded. I had no freedom, no liberty, no joy in our house. That's going on everywhere. Just received a text from a dear friend. Wife's mom diagnosed with a very serious illness. His parents have serious illnesses. And he's, you know, trying to also be married. He's got kids, dealing with in-laws, mom and dad, all health-related issues. And if you knew this fellow, you would look at him from the outside and go, he's got it sweet. Because we can be deceived in looking at the outward lives of most people. And that's really what we see, isn't it? Not only do we just see the outward lives of people, just that there's the surfacey stuff that we all do a great job working very hard to present as being very shiny. The internet just makes that even worse, how we present ourselves. Everything is fun. It's always a good time. The girls are having a gas on the night out on the town. Oh, everything is so funny. Look at the guys at the game. They get to go to football games and have fun. Everything looks wonderful. And if you saw my friend, you would think it's all good. That's a lie. Nobody's got it all good. You go through seasons, yeah, there's peaks and there's valleys, but everybody is going through stuff. Everybody has challenges. Everybody has difficulties. Don't be deceived by what the world would sell you, that your life stinks by comparison. You're not alone in this. You are not alone. Life is hard because of the fall. Bible explains this whole shebang. A lot of it in Romans chapter 1. I think I mentioned I'm going to be at Crabapple First Baptist Church, Crabapple, Georgia. It's a suburb outside of Atlanta, a really lovely part of the country. And I'm going to be talking about, of all things, the noetic effect of the fall. And so in preparation for this, I wanted to study what the Bible talks about, how the brain doesn't function rightly, how it doesn't operate the way that it's supposed to. But then I also wanted to do some studying of other people that are a lot smarter than I am to see what they had to say about the subject. And you know how much there is out there in theological circles on broken brains, bad thinking? Scant little. John Calvin probably wrote the most on it. Abraham Kuyper, he wrote on it. That's about it. Why isn't there more time taken spent understanding that our brains are our thinking is off, and we do everything aimed in the wrong direction? Our starting place is wrong. You see that in Romans chapter 1, and it has the explanation for it, so you don't get too depressed about it. It explains, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. He shows it through creation. There it is. Because they knew God, they didn't glorify him. They weren't thankful, but they became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. So the more we suppress the truth about God, the more our hearts are changed, because our thoughts are futile, and our hearts get darker because of it, and we do worse things, and people do worse things, and that's what we're seeing in our world, and that's what we see in ourselves. And so we worship God like a bird or a four-footed animal. Therefore, God gave them up to uncleanness. So God goes, all right, fine. That's what you want. who exchanged the truth of God for the lie. There it is right there. This is, that's the whole battle right there. I'm either believing truth or I'm believing a lie. I'm inclined to believe the lie. Why? Because the world is under a curse. That's what it tells me. For this reason, God gave them up to vile passions, and he describes that. Verse 28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which were not fitting. He gave them over. He gave them over. He gave them over. Knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. Because of the fall, God placed the world under a curse. And that includes our brain, all of creation, including our noggins, groan. Here's the truth. Life is hard because of the curse. Other people's lives are hard. Do not be deceived. We're all going through it. And if you're not, help somebody who is. But don't be deceived that thinking you're the only one, your life is hard, because life is hard. But there is hope. And if we stop believing lies that we see on the internet, that the world system peddles us, start increasingly believing the truth, our emotions will be healed, our thinking will be righted, and we will be more in alignment with God and what is reality. And then even though life can be difficult, we will be able to handle the storms because the captain is at the helm. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.